Okay, here we are, ready for our Bhagavad Gita class. Nice to see everybody. And we have devotees from Fiji, Goku, Bandhu in Fiji. Very nice, Madhvacharya and Sumuk in Fiji. Okay, we'll chant Jai Radha Madhava. Jai Radha Madhava. Kunda Bihari Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunda Bihari Gopi Jana Malabha Giri Vadata Gudri Gopi Jana Malabha Giri Vadata Huti Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Manachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunda Vihahuti Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunda Vihari Gopi Jana Malabha Giri Vadadha Uthi Gopi Jana Malabha Giri Vadadha Uthi Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Om Vishnupad. Paramahansa Paravatakacharya, also Teta, Satashi Shimad. His Divine Grace, Abhaya Chandana Bhaktivedanta Gosami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrindi Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Hridas Thakur Ki Jai. Param se kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shri Vasudeva Gaur Bhakta Vrindika Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopi Gopinath Shai Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Ki Jai Vachuradam Ki Jai Jagadatha Swami Ki Jai Yamunamai Ki Jai Srimati Kalasi Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindika Jai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Gaur. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premananda. Ma Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Pristaya Vudle. Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namani. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pachari. Nivishesha Shindavadi Paschacha Deja Tarani. So Om Gana Tivadanda Shah Gananjana Shlakya Chakshuran Rinitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada so kindly opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Okay, So we will have our Bhagavad Gita class. We are continuing with the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Let me just share the screen. Text 17. Okay. Let's clear the screen. Pitahamasya jagato matatata pitamaha vedam pavitram omkara riksamayajur evacha. Pita, father, aham, I, asha of this, jagataha, universe, matha, mother, tata, supporter, pitamaha, grandfather, vedam, what is to be known? Pavitram, that which purifies. Omkara, the syllable Om. Rik, the Rig Veda. Sama, the Sama Veda. Yajur, the Yajur Veda. Eva, certainly. Cha, and. Translation, I am the father of this universe, the mother, the support, and the grandsire. I am the object of knowledge, the purifier, and the syllable Om. I am also the Rig, Sama, and Yajur Vedas. So, anyway, Krishna is just another word saying he is everything. He's the creator of the universe. He is the instrumental creator. He is the one who stimulates the instruments. He is everything. He's knowledge, the object of knowledge, person who purifies, the syllable Om. And these three Vedas. So as Krishna says in the Gita, the 10th chapter, Aham sarvasya prabho matak sarvam pavartate iti matva bhajanti mam buddha bhava samandata. So what that means is I'm the source of everything. From me the entire creation flows. The wise worship me with all their hearts. And then Krishna says, what? Machata, Makata, Prana, Bodhyantascha, Parasparam, Katyantascha, Mam, Nicham, Tishanticha, Pramanticha. So therefore, they worship me by talking about me. Machata, Makata, Prana, Bodhyantascha, Parasparam, exchanging different words about me. Katyantascha, Mam, Nicham, my eternal pastimes. Tushanti cha, ramanti cha. This way they are satisfied and they are happy. It's very easy. Very interesting. It's similar to the verses in this chapter. Anyway, it's very similar to what's described in this chapter, this in the 10th chapter. Those are the first two of the nutshell verses of the Bhagavad Gita. So Prabhupada explains in his purport, the entire cosmic manifestations, moving and non-moving, are manifested by different activities of Krishna's energy. In the material existence, we create different relationships with different living entities for nothing but Krishna's marginal energy. Under the creation of Prakriti, some of them appear as our father, mother, grandfather, creator, etc. But actually, they are parts and parcels of Krishna. As such, these living entities who appear to be our father, mother, etc., are nothing but Krishna. That doesn't mean that our father is Krishna, our mother is Krishna. Our aunt and our uncle, grandfather, etc., are Krishna. But they're parts and parcels of Krishna. They're Krishna's energy. That's what it means. So we have to see them as being connected to Krishna, not separate from Krishna. Actually, Krishna in the Bhagavatam states that, what is it, rite ritam napratyeta, napratyeta, chatmani tad vidyat, atmano mayamitav asayatatamah. If we see anything not connected to Krishna, that is the definition of maya, or Krishna's illusory energy. That's one of the nutshell verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In other words, we have to see everyone and everything as connected to Krishna, not separate from Krishna. And then ultimately, because they're connected to Krishna, Krishna is manifesting himself through our father, mother, etc., relatives, friends, politicians, everything. In this verse, the word Datta means creator. Not only are our mother and father parts and parcels of Krishna, which is what I just said, but the creator, grandmother and grandfather, etc., are also Krishna, creator. Here refers to the Lord Brahma. Actually, any living entity being part and parcel of Krishna is Krishna. There's that statement again. So what it means is they're manifestations of Krishna's energy, they're parts and parcels of Krishna, but they're not fully Krishna. In other words, they're not God. It's not that every living entity is God, but they are part of God. And they have God in the heart. So we have to qualify that statement that everyone, it is not that everyone is Krishna in every respect. Of course, that's again the Chincha Veda Veda Tattva philosophy. All the Vedas therefore aim only toward Krishna. Whatever we want to know through the Vedas is but a progressive step toward understanding Krishna. That subject matter which helps us purify our constitution of Krishna is especially Krishna. Everything in one sense is Krishna. Similarly, the living entity who is inquisitive to understand all Vedic principles is also part and parcel of Krishna. And as such, is also Krishna. So everything is just connected to Krishna. I mean, just like, okay, let me give an example now of electricity. So in the powerhouse, there's electricity. And here is electricity. But there's a difference between the amount of electricity in the powerhouse and the amount of electricity here. So we are samples of Krishna. In other words, it's like a drop of water. If you scientifically analyze it, has the same constitution as a bigger body of water. You just take one drop out. I mean, but let's give an example with something medical. Okay. Let's say you go to the doctor and are having a blood test. So the doctor wants to see what's happening with all the blood in your body. So does he take all the blood out of your body? No. He takes a few drops, or maybe a little capsule or whatever, out of the body, and he tests that because that's representative of the whole body. So, in other words, we are, in one sense, tiny Krishnas, if that word could be used. We have the same qualities as Krishna, but in different quantity. We have free will, Krishna has free will. We have a desire to enjoy, Krishna has a desire to enjoy. We have a desire to have loving relationships. Krishna has a desire to have loving relationships. In all the Vedic mantras, the word Om called Pranava is a transcendental sound vibration and is also Krishna. And because in all the hymns of the four Vedas, Sama, Yajur, Rig, and Atharva, the Pranava or Omkara is very prominent. It is understood to be Krishna. In other words, we described this previously, that even if one recites Vedic mantras in glorification or worship of the demigods, these Vedic mantras are always preceded by the Om. Now remember, Pranava, Om, they're the same thing. And Om is non-different from the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. A-U-M. Radha, Krishna, and the living entities. And what is the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra? Hare is Radharani. Krishna is Krishna. And Rama is Lord Ram, Balaram, and also Radha Raman. So, and Om, Hare Krishna, one sense, non-different. So, anyway, so people who chant the Vedic mantras are, in one sense, tricked if they don't have the intention of worshiping Krishna, they're tricked to worship Krishna. In much the same way as we described yesterday, the followers of Lord Buddha are tricked in their worship of God, because they're actually worshiping God, like Lord Buddha is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, next verse. Gatir Varta Prabhu Sakshi Nivasya Sharanam Suhrit Prabhava Pralaya Stanam Nidanam Vijamavyayam. Gatahi Go Varta Sustainer Prabhu Lord Sakshi Witness Nivasaha Abode Sharanam Refuge Suhrit Most Intimate Friend Prabhavaha Creation Pralayaha Dissolution Stanam, ground. Nidanam, resting place. Bijam, seed. Avyam, imperishable. Translation. I am the goal, the sustainer, the master, the witness, the abode, the refuge, and the most dear friend. I am the creation and the annihilation, the basis of everything, the resting place, and the eternal seed. That's a lot of things. So, the goal is to be Krishna conscious, sustainer, Krishna's maintaining all of us, nityo nityanam, chaitanya's chaitanyanam. Krishna's the master, he's the supreme controller, Ishwara, he's the witness, sakshi, that means he's witnessing everything in the heart. The abode of bhakti and love, our ultimate refuge, and he's our most dear friend. Very easy. Krishna does the creation, he annihilates. He creates everything, he's the base of everything, and at the end of the creation, where everything rests, and Krishna emanates the seeds that create this material world in his form as the Mahavishnu. Pretty inclusive there. Gati means the destination where we want to go. But the ultimate goal is Krishna, although people do not know it. One who does not know Krishna is misled, and his so-called progressive march is either partial or hallucinatory. There are many who make as their destination different demigods, and by rigid performance of the strict respective methods, they reach different planets known as Chandraloka, that's moon, Suryaloka, sun, Indraloka, that's the planet of Indra, and Maharloka, etc. But all such lokas, or planets, being creations of Krishna, are simultaneously Krishna and not Krishna. Again, Prabhupada is talking about the Achincha Beta Beta Thakura philosophy. How everything is the same and different from Krishna simultaneously. It's the same because it's Krishna's energy. It's the same because Krishna's in every atom. It's the same because Krishna's controlling it. And it's different because Krishna has his separate existence in the spiritual world, where he's enacting his pastimes. Such planets, being manifestations of Krishna's energy, are also Krishna, but actually they serve only as a step forward for realization of Krishna. To approach the different energies of Krishna is to approach Krishna indirectly. There's that statement. One should directly approach Krishna, for that will save time and energy. For example, if there's a possibility of going to the top of a building by the help of an elevator, why should one go by the staircase step by step? Everything is resting on Krishna's energy. Therefore, without Krishna's shelter, nothing can exist. Krishna is the supreme ruler because everything belongs to him, and everything exists on his energy. Krishna being situated in everyone's heart is the supreme witness. The residences, countries, or planets on which we live are also Krishna. Phew. Krishna is the ultimate goal of shelter. And therefore, one should take shelter of Krishna either for protection or for annihilation of his distress. And whenever we have to take protection, we should know that our protection must be a living force. Krishna is the supreme living entity. And since Krishna is the source of our generation, or the Supreme Father, no one can be a better friend than Krishna. Nor can anyone be a better well-wisher. Krishna is the original source of creation and the ultimate rest after annihilation. Krishna is therefore the eternal cause of all causes. How can you avoid Krishna? Krishna is also my computer. Krishna is the intelligence that I have. Krishna is the strength I have. Krishna is the taste of water. I mean, it's hard to avoid Krishna. So, and next verse. Tapanyaham aham varsham nigrananyutsrajami cha amritam jaiva machuscha sadasaccha humarjuna. Tapami, give heat. Aham I, varsham rain. Nigranami, withhold. Utsrajami, send forth. Cha and amritam, immortality. Cha and eva, certainly, mrityuhu, death. Cha and sat, spirit, asat, matter. Cha and aham, I, Arjuna, O Arjuna. So translation, O Arjuna, I give heat and I withhold and send forth the rain. I am immortality and I'm also death personified. Both spirit and matter are in me. This is everything. So Krishna, by his different energies, diffuses heat and light through the agency of electricity in the sun. During summer season, it is Krishna who checks rain from falling from the sky, and then during the rainy season, he gives unceasing torrents of rain. Of course, here we're referring to India's seasons. There's actually a rainy season where it just rains and rains and rains and floods, and then there's a hot season where it doesn't rain usually. The energy which sustains us by prolonging the duration of our life is Krishna, and Krishna meets us at the end as death, is this verse in the Gita. Mrityu sarvaharaschaham. By analyzing all these different energies of Krishna, one can ascertain that for Krishna there is no distinction between matter and spirit. In other words, he is both matter and spirit. In the advanced stage of Krishna consciousness, one therefore makes no such distinctions. He sees only Krishna in everything. I'll give you an example. Let's say you see someone's car. Then you see the person, or you see someone's clothes. You see the person because it belongs to that particular individual. So everything becomes an impetus to remembering Krishna. In Sanskrit language, the impetus for remembering is called the vibhava, which technically means that which stimulates an emotion. For example, once upon a time there was a devotee named Mukunda. And this Mukunda, he was in the employment of the Muslim Nawab, who was like a king or, you know, at least administrative of a particular area. And this Muslim was sitting on a big high throne being fanned, and he, that is Mukunda, had the job of advising the Muslim man in medical affairs. And so as he was advising him in medical affairs, he happened to see the fan that was fanning the king. Now, what's so good about a fan? What's so unusual? Why am I talking about the fan? Because the fan was a peacock fan. And when he saw the peacock fan, what happened? He fainted. He fell to the ground off the dais, and this Muslim came down and said, "What's wrong with you?" And Mukunda, rather than admitting that he was feeling ecstasy, he just said, "Why, I've epilepsy." But actually, it was a symptom of love of God. So the point is that peacock feather that he saw reminded him of Krishna, because Krishna wears a peacock feather. And when you see a peacock feather, you remember Krishna. So for a pure devotee, everything becomes an impetus to remembering Krishna. Anything, like a pure devotee would look at his computer, which I'm looking at right now, and he just remember Krishna. Look at his watch, remember Krishna. To the sky, remember Krishna, because he sees Krishna in everything. One who sees, as Krishna states in the sixth chapter, remember the verse? This is one of my favorite verses. Yomam pashati sarvatra sarvam jamai pashati tashaham na pranashyami sacham e na pranashyati. Krishna says, one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me is never lost to me, nor am I ever lost to him. That's what it means to see everything. And also to see how everything can be used for Krishna. Like if one sees a computer, you think of how it can be used for Krishna. Everything can be used for Krishna. Since Krishna is both matter and spirit, the gigantic universal form comprising material manifestations is also Krishna, and his pastimes in Vrindavan, his two-handed Shyamashundara playing on a flute, are those of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in other words, in one sense, let me turn this off so we don't get messages in the middle. So in one sense, everything is Krishna, but in a higher sense, we are attracted to his pastimes in Vrindavan. Shyamashundara means the beautiful blackish form of Krishna. Chama means like blackish. Sundara means beautiful. Playing on a flute, interacting in a very loving fashion with his devotees. Okay, next verse. All these verses are describing how everything is Krishna. Trividyamam somapaputapapam yagyaishtva swargatim pratyante te punya sadya suranya lokam shnanti divyan divideva bogan. Trividyaha, the knowers of the three Vedas, mam, me, somapaha, drinkers of soma juice, puta, purified, papa, of sins, yagnahai, with sacrifices, Ishtva, worshipping, Swagatim, passage to heaven, Apratyante, pray for, Te, they, Punyam, pious, Asadya, attaining, Sura Indra, of Indra, Lokam, the world, Ashnanti, enjoy, Divyan, celestial, Divi, in heaven, Deva Bhogan, the pleasures of the gods. Those who study the Vedas and drink this soma juice, remember I was talking about soma juice? That's the heavenly type of beverage, like a type of intoxication, but it's not broken the regulated principles. Seeking the heavenly planets, worship me indirectly. In other words, those who approach the Vedas, they want to go to the heavenly planets, and they don't want to go to Krishna, but indirectly they're worshiping Krishna, and of course they're also chanting Om, like I mentioned before. Purified of sinful reactions, they take birth on the pious heavenly planet of Indra, where they enjoy godly delights. So, what happens on the planet of Indra? Very long life. Also, everyone is beautiful. Also, there's no disease on the planet of Indra. And we also mentioned there's no crying babies also on the planet of Indra. And it's very enjoyable. So, what happens on that planet of Indra is people enjoy it, and they forget about their spiritual life, become enamored with the material energy. Not everyone. Some people are great devotees even there. And then, when their good karma runs out, they come back. We're going to hear about that. The word Trividyaha refers to the three Vedas, Veda, Sama, Yajur, and Riga. A Brahmin who has studied these three Vedas is called a Trivedi. Anyone who is very much attached to knowledge derived from these three Vedas is respected, from these three Vedas, respected in society. Unfortunately, there are many great scholars of the Vedas who do not know the ultimate purport of studying them. Therefore, Krishna herein declares himself to be the ultimate goal for the Trivedis. Also, sometimes people call it Chaturvedis or Dvivedis. Dvi means two, Chatur means four. Actually, Trivedis take shelter under the lotus feet of Krishna and engage in pure devotional service to satisfy the Lord. Devotional service begins with the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra and side by side trying to understand Krishna in truth. Unfortunately, those who are simply official students of the Vedas become more interested in offering sacrifices to the different demigods like Indra and Chandra. By such endeavor, the worshippers of different demigods are certainly purified of the contamination of the lower qualities of nature and are thereby elevated to the higher planetary systems or heavenly planets known as Maharloka. So it's a stepping stone, Janaloka, Tapaloka, etc. Once situated in those higher planetary systems, one can satisfy his senses hundreds of thousands of times better than on this planet. And I don't want to go there. Because one gets bewildered. The more material enjoyment you have, the more you begin to think that this is permanent. You forget, you get enamored, bewildered, intoxicated by material enjoyment. And then when it's all over, it's all over. And you never had time for self-realization. So, there's a problem. Of course, Mahaloka, Janaloka, and Tapaloka, they are very much inclined towards spirituality. So these planets can be utilized as stepping stones to ultimately reach the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness. But as far as being interested in gratifying our senses hundreds and thousands of times better than on this planet, that is not our interest. So here, Krishna talks about the problem there. So here's the big problem. It's temporary. Te tam bhukva swagra lokam vishalam shine punye varche lokam vishanti evan trai dharmam anuprapana gata gatam kama kama lokam te. Te, they, tam, that, bhuktva, enjoying, swarga lokam, heaven, vishalam, vast, shine, being exhausted, punye, the results of their pious activities, marcha lokam, to the mortal earth, vishanti, fall down, evam, thus, trai, of the three Vedas, dharmam, doctrines, anuprapanaha, following, gata, agatam, death and birth, kama, kamaha, desiring sense enjoyment, lavante, attain. So here's the key. When they have thus enjoyed vast heavenly sense pleasure and the results of their pious activities are exhausted, they return to this mortal planet again. Thus those who seek sense enjoyment by adhering to the principles of the three Vedas achieve only repeated birth and death. We've described this before. You go to the heavenly planets by accruing volumes of material pious activities, sacrifices, and everything like that, and building up your pious, good karma bank account. And once you built it up, you can get what you want. There's like, here in this temple, we have someone who's building up his bank account to buy a van. Okay, nothing wrong with that. And some people are building up their karmic bank account so they can go to heaven, purchase their ticket to heaven, the frequent flyer karma. So anyways, they purchase their ticket to heaven, they go to heaven, and when their money runs out, their good karma runs out, they come back here. So in other words, that's just repeated birth and death, and it's temporary, it's a lot of fun in the meantime. Just like you go on vacation, you get 2 weeks off, 3 weeks off, and you have a lot of fun, but back to work ultimately. And that's the problem. So here's this verse is the key to why we are not interested in performing Vedic rituals and going to the heavenly planets. One who is promoted to the higher planetary systems enjoys a longer duration of life and better facilities for sense enjoyment, yet one is not allowed to stay there forever. One is again sent back to this earth upon finishing the resultant fruits of pious activities. He who has not attained perfection of knowledge, as indicated in the Vedanta Sutra, janma jasya yataha, which means the absolute truth is everything. Everything comes from the absolute truth. And Prabhupada here explains it, certain words. Or in other words, he who fails to understand Krishna as the cause of all causes, everything comes from him, becomes baffled about achieving the ultimate goal of life and is thus subjected to the routine of being promoted to higher planets and then again coming down as if situated on a Ferris wheel which sometimes goes up and sometimes goes down. You may not be aware what a Ferris wheel is. It's like in the amusement parks, they used to have this big wheel and there was chairs on different levels and the wheel would go up and down, up and down, up and down. Everyone would think, oh, this is mixed down. It's not. The purport is that instead of being elevated to the spiritual world, from which there is no longer any possibility of coming down, one simply revolves in the cycle of birth and death on a higher and lower planetary systems. One should better take to the spiritual world to enjoy an eternal life full of bliss and knowledge and never return to this miserable material existence. That reminds me of a saying in English. When people work a job and it happens to be Friday, they have a saying, thank God it's Friday, so they can actually enjoy it. And then Monday is a miserable day because they're back to work. And so that's like going to the heavenly planets, and then you come back down again. So text 22, and this is such an important verse, and a verse that we should all remember. Ananyas chintayanto mam yejanak paripasate tesham nityavayuktanam yurikshema mahamyaham. Ananya, having no other object, chintayanta, concentrating mam on me, ye, those who, janaha, persons, paripasate, properly worship, tesham, of them, nitya, always, abhiyuktanam, fixed in devotion, yoga requirements, shemam, protection, vahami, carry, aham, I. Translation, but those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. Wow. Very important verse. To those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. So Krishna takes care of you, in other words. So it's a very interesting point about this verse. There was one sadhu, and I don't remember his name, who actually objected to this point that Krishna personally does these things. So he wanted to make a change in this particular verse. And he wanted to explain that, yes, Krishna protects what they have and carries what they lack through his energy, not personally. So he scratched out part of this verse, I guess the aham part, I personally do it. And then he went out and he went to take his bath or something like that. And then a little boy came to the house, and the little boy was greeted by the man's wife, and the little boy was all scratched up. And that little boy was Krishna. And the man's wife said, the Brahmin's wife said, who has done this to you? And the boy said, your husband did it to me. And she couldn't believe it. And when the husband came back, she said, have you done this to the little boy? And then he understood. He had scratched out part of the Bhagavad Gita because he disagreed with what the Bhagavad Gita said. He didn't think that Krishna personally carries what we lack and preserves what we have. But Krishna personally does that. To someone who's devoted to him, Krishna's personally paying attention and taking care, just like a mother is taking care of a child. One who's unable to live for a moment without Krishna consciousness cannot but think of Krishna 24 hours a day, being engaged in devotional service by hearing, chanting, remembering, offering prayers, worshiping, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, rendering other services, cultivating friendship, and surrendering fully to the Lord. Such activities are all auspicious and full of spiritual potencies which make the devotee perfect in self-realization so that his only desire is to achieve the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a devotee undoubtedly approaches the Lord without difficulty. This is called yoga, connection. By the mercy of the Lord, such a devotee never comes back to this material condition of life. Shema refers to the merciful protection of the Lord. The Lord helps the devotee to achieve Krishna consciousness by yoga, and he becomes fully Krishna conscious. When he becomes fully Krishna conscious, the Lord protects him from falling down to a miserable, conditioned life. Whew. So this is Krishna's guarantee. Such a wonderful verse. Ananyas chintayanto mam yejanak paripasate. For those who are devoted to me, I take care of whatever they lack, and I preserve what they have, I protect what they have. Text 23. ye vinanya devata bhakta yasante sharayan vitaha te bhimam eva kaunteya vijantya vidhi purvakam. Ye those who appear also anya of other devata, gods, bhaktaha, devotees, yajante, worship, shadiya, anvitaha, with faith, te, they, api also, mam, me, eva, only, kuntiya, son of kunti, yajanti, they worship, aviti purvakam, in a wrong way. Those who are devotees of other gods and worship them with faith actually worship only me, O son of kunti, but they do so in a wrong way. And this verse we use many times when dealing with those who worship the demigods. They say, well, you can worship anyone, any demigod. You get to the same place. Of course, Krishna doesn't say that. So this is verse states that if Anya Devata Bhakta, if one is a devotee, Anya, another, Devata, of another, of a Devata, you know, one of the demigods. Krishna says, therefore, he's a vidhi purvagam. He's following the wrong path. Or a vidhi purvagam. Vidhi. The process, like vidhi, like vaidhi bhakti. So the process he's doing is the wrong process. A vidhi. It's like you have vaidhi. Vaidhi bhakti, which means practice. And a vidhi is the opposite. It's not the practice, it's not the path. Or Prabhupada translates it as it's in a wrong way. Wrong way, buddy. So, aviti purvakam. So, this is something I often quote when I'm talking to people who worship the demigods. I said, the Christian says this is aviti purvakam. It's the wrong way. Just refer to this verse. So, persons who are engaged in the worship of demigods are not very intelligent, although such worship is offered to me indirectly, Krishna says. Of course, in other words, kamaishtaishtaravidhyanaprapajantevadevita. Those whose intelligence is stolen by lust, they worship the demigods. That's another verse. Krishna says, for example, when a man pours water on the leaves and branches of a tree, without pouring water on the root, he does so without sufficient knowledge or without observing regulative principles. So in other words, you want to water the leaves, then you water the root. Similarly, the process of rendering service to different parts of the body is to supply food to the stomach. The demigods are, so to speak, in other words, Krishna, if we serve Krishna, we're actually serving everybody. If we try to serve everyone separate from Krishna, we're not even rendering service to them because we're doing things in the wrong way. It's like giving someone who has some sickness, some food that's going to make him more sick, even though he's asking for it. You find that oftentimes that someone is very sick and they're supposed to avoid certain foods or certain activities. And they may ask for those foods or ask for those activities. And you may think sentimentally, oh, I should serve them. I should do what they ask for. But actually, you're damaging them. So the idea is to know what is good for someone, and to know what is good for that someone, you have to approach Krishna. The demigods, or in the medical field, the doctor, the demigods are, so to speak, different officers and directors in the government of the Supreme Lord. One has to follow the laws made by the government, not by the officers or directors. Unless you're in a corrupt society, then you bribe the officers and directors. And that's a vidhi purvakam. It's like bribing to get something, which we've had some experience of in certain countries. But it's not the process recommended. Similarly, everyone is to offer his worship to the Supreme Lord only. That will automatically satisfy the different officers and directors of the Lord. The officers and directors are engaged as representatives of the government to offer some bribe. Here's Prabhupada making the point about bribe to the officers and directors is illegal. This is stated here as aviti purvakam. In other words, Krishna does not approve the unnecessary worship of the demigods. Now, sometimes in this material world, yeah, you got to slip some money or what do they say, grease the palm of someone to get something. I mean, one time I was in a car with someone and you were entering a particular country, not right in this part of the world, somewhere else in the world, and the person didn't have the necessary paperwork. He forgot to bring it with him for the car. And they said, yeah, you can't enter this country with that car. And I said, look, you put this money inside your passport, and you go to the man and show him your passport with the bill inside. And you say to him, I think we have the permit. Let me take a look at my passport. The man takes a look at the passport, drops the passport on the ground so the camera won't see him taking the money, grabs the money, and he says, yes, you have the permit. Okay, go ahead. But that is not proper. Sometimes in the material world, there's certain places that function like that, unfortunately. But we do not want to do activities that are not legal. All right. Next verse. Aham hi sarva yajnanam bhukta cha prabhu eva cha natu mam abhijananti tatvenatascha vandite. Aham, I, he, surely, sarva of all, yajnanam, sacrifices, bhukta, the enjoyer, cha, and prabhu, the Lord, eva, also, cha, and na, not to, but, mam, me, Avijananti, they know, tatvena, in reality, ataha, therefore, chavanti, fall down, te, they. I am the only enjoyer, master of all sacrifices. Therefore, those who do not recognize my true transcendental nature fall down. Wow. Heavy statement. Krishna's the only enjoyer and master of all sacrifices. One of the things that anyone else is the enjoyer, you're the enjoyer, anything else, ultimately, you fall down from your spiritual position. Or even from your material position. Purport. Here it is clearly stated there are many different types of yajna performances recommended in the Vedic literatures, but actually all of them are meant for satisfying the Supreme Lord. Yajna means Vishnu. In the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that one should only work for satisfying yajna or Vishnu. The perfectional form of human civilization known as Varnashram Dharma is specifically meant for satisfying Vishnu. Therefore, Krishna says in this verse, I am the enjoyer of all sacrifices because I am the Supreme Master. Remember, what does he say, 529 in the Gita? Bhaktaram Jagatapasam Sarvalokamaheshwaram. Same thing. I am the enjoyer. Bhaktaram Jagatapasam. All sacrifices. Sarvalokamaheshwaram. Same thing. Because I am Sarva, all planets, Loka, love means planets, Maheshram, Mahaishvara, means the supreme controller. Same thing. Less intelligent persons, however, without knowing this fact, worship demigods for temporary benefit. Therefore, they fall down to material existence and do not achieve the desired goal of life. If, however, anyone has any material desire to be fulfilled, he had better pray for it to the Supreme Lord, although that is not pure devotion. And he will thus achieve the desired result. So, of course, Krishna does say that, akama, moksha kama, moksha kama, sarva kama, udaradi, pivrena bhakti yogena, yajeta purusham param, that whether one is full of material desires, free of material desires, or even desiring liberation, one should worship Krishna tivrena, in a very enthusiastic, forceful way. One should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we find examples. A few days ago, we gave the example of Dhruva Maharaj, who had a material desire. What was his material desire? To have a kingdom greater than that of Lord Brahma. He worshipped very enthusiastically, and he became a pure devotee of the Lord. So the motivation may not be pure in the beginning. Just like we heard about the four types of people who approached Krishna previously, right? Chatur, Vidha, Vijanti, Man. Those who are looking for wealth, those who are inquisitive, those who are looking for knowledge, or those who are in distress. So for whatever reason we want something, or rather than approach some other, let's say, demigod or ritual or whatever, we should approach Krishna and we'll get purified. And there are Actually, there's quite a few examples of that. There's Gajendra Moksha's story, where there was this elephant on the higher planets, of course, who actually was being attacked by a crocodile, and he prayed to Krishna, and he got liberated from the crocodile. He remembered his prayers from his previous life. In his previous life, he was a king. He made a mistake, and he got freed of his situation and became a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or you have devotee people who are scared into becoming devotees, like they were shown their karma or their future karma. For example, you have Magrari the Hunter. Magrari the Hunter was someone who was half killing animals, and he was shown his future by Narada Muni. His future was that all these same animals were going to be able to torture him in the future. And so he got scared. He said, "What should I do?" And Narada Muni said, "Give it all up, shave your head, chant Hare Krishna, sit by the bank of the river, and worship Tulsi." And he did that because the impetus wasn't pure devotion. In the beginning, the impetus was fear, you know, freedom from the stress again. And then ultimately he became a pure devotee. So, and then you have the prostitute in Haridas Thakur. She was approaching Haridas Thakur for God knows what. Of course, we do know what. And she was approaching, and she was chanting the holy name, just imitating him, and she became purified. So however you come in contact with Krishna, even accidentally, wanting something else, because Krishna is the supreme pure, Om Apavacha Apavitra Va, Sarva Vastam Gatopi Vayaksmaret Pundurigaksham Savaya Avyantara Shuti Shri Vishnu Shri Vishnu Shri Vishnu. So one who remembers the Supreme Lord, whatever reason you have for remembering him, then you become purified. Om Apavitra Apavitra Va. Whether someone is impure or pure in the beginning, if one remembers the Supreme Lord, one can reach the supreme transcendental direction. Okay, so now we will take questions. Hold on a second. Let us take off the mute from all of you. Okay, so who wants to ask a question? Nalini Kant, you have your opportunity now.
Hare Krishna Gurudev, Dandavat Pranam, thank you very much for this.
Hare Bao.
Gurudev, some people when they start reading Bhagavad Gita, including myself, although I was reading with devotees at that time, but this question came to my mind that is Krishna boasting himself? So some people ask and we try to give answer, but they maybe not satisfied with my answers. So how should I mean, what to answer?
Is Krishna boasting?
Like they say, Krishna is saying, I'm the only one. And usually yes. They are Indians and like they think, we are trying to offend Lord Shiva and others. Even, and when we try to explain that we are not trying to offend Lord Shiva and
Krishna doesn't say you disrespect anybody. Where does Krishna say you should disrespect people? Actually, Lord Chaitanya says amanina manadena. One should respect everyone. But one should also understand that, you know, worship, everything comes from Krishna. That's the point. It's not that you disrespect Lord Shiva or you disrespect even an ant, Prabhupada said. So, but everything comes from Krishna. And if one doesn't understand that, one is in ignorance.
Okay.
And that's why Krishna keeps making the point. Yes, he's boasting, but he has a right to boast. Mm-hmm. I mean, just like Krishna has an ego. But it's not a false ego. You know, my ego, your ego, that's a false ego. Thinking that we're the controller, we're the proprietor, we're the enjoyer. Krishna is the proprietor. So he's just speaking the truth. There's no problem with Krishna boasting. Krishna is the ultimate egotist. Right? Krishna likes his own beauty. He sees a reflection of his physical, or not physical, spiritual form in the lake, and he falls in love. He just thinks, this is the most beautiful person I've ever seen, because he is. But if we see the reflection of our physical form in a mirror, and we think, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the most beautiful or handsome creep of them all, person of them all. You know, so that's false, because what is this body? You know, this body is your doctor. You open up bodies every day, don't you?
No.
No? Don't you see blood every day?
Yes.
You see blood and pus, all these wonderful substances that are contained within the body. So how can one think that this body is beautiful like that? So anyway, but Krishna has an eternal, blissful, spiritual body, and Krishna has every reason to be proud. Even if Krishna is boasting, it's fine. Boasting is bad when you can't live up to the mark. Just like there's a politician who shall remain nameless, who always says, he's in the United States, he says, I'm the most intelligent. Oh, looks like Jagga has the app working. He's zooming in and out of himself. It's working, or somewhat. Anyway, that's good. So he's working on an app for me that'll move the camera. But anyway, so whatever Krishna says is true about himself. So it's not false. So why shouldn't Krishna speak the truth? It's for our benefit also. But Krishna never decries the demigods. He just says, worship of the demigods as God is a vidipurvakam. It's the wrong path. He never says, don't respect the demigods. In fact, Krishna himself, like Lord Ram, worshipped Lord Shiva, or he respected Lord Shiva. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went into the Shiva temples and respected Lord Shiva, but he never thought that Shiva was God. That's the difference. Okay?
Thank you, Guru.
All right. Who else has a question? Yes, Radhasundari, you have a question.
Gurudev, Dhanu Pranam. I just wanted to ask you, why do people have a Radha Krishna deities at home, and then they have these demigods, and then they pray to demigods, and so what's the point of having Radha and Krishna deity?
Well, maybe they're trying to satisfy the demigods by giving them the remnants of Radha and Krishna. That's all right.
It's just, I've been in my relatives' places a lot, you know. It's just, these things, it just doesn't, I just don't get it, because...
Well, that's what we call hodgepodge. Anyway, but the point is, what I've seen in Fiji, because your relatives are all from Fiji and you're from Fiji, so I know that. What I've seen in Fiji is that people keep the demigods on the altar just in case, because they're worried. I mean, I hear this all the time when someone joins the Krishna Conscious Movement, their family says, you're going to get really sick, you're going to die because you're not worshiping so-and-so. And when the person actually gets a cold, they'll say, that's because you didn't worship Durga. And so there's a lot of fear there. They don't have complete faith in Krishna. So they have some fear. What if? What if Krishna isn't God? Let me just, we call that embedding, hedging your bets. I'll give you an example of what hedging your bets means. Hedging your bets means if you ever go to a horse race, which you shouldn't go to, and bet on a horse, okay? Let's say there's a horse named, let me give him a spiritual name, named Gopal in the first race, you know. And he's racing against, we have another spiritual name, a Palambasura. You know, it's two horses racing against each other. And a horse race. I mean, you have horse races there in Sydney, I'm sure. Right?
A lot.
I mean, even one time, before I joined the movement, I went to a horse race. So I know what it is. It's not just secondhand experience. So you have two horses. And, or, you know, maybe there's 10 horses in a race. So then one horse is the favorite. That's Gopal. And the second horse, Palambasura, is the second favorite. So what you do is you bet on both horses. And that way, you're going to win. That's called hedging your bets. Even though Gopal always wins, I hope, and Palambasura always loses. But you, so that's a technical word in betting that's called hedging your bets. You know, you just like make bets so you're going to win in any case, and you're, even if you lose, it's not going to be so bad like that.
But they do that in the
stock market too when they invest. It's a common investment technique. So people in Fiji, they have Krishna on the altar. Okay, those Hare Krishnas got me to worship Krishna, but what if? What if, you know, Krishna's nice, but what if, you know, Durga gets angry with me, or Murugan, or whatever, you know, anyway, what if? And so they just want to make sure they don't offend anybody.
But the point but I don't really, get, Gurudev, is like, when they really get sick, they do come running to Krishna to worship, they do come running to Nrisingadev, you know, there, but then when everything goes hush hush, they just go back to demigods. I don't understand that part.
That's also another reason is because it's their childhood. You know, what you're brought up in the childhood is you sort of get attached to. You know, like I was brought up, you know, I was brought up, how was I brought up? I wasn't brought up. Anyways, let's use an example, a non-religious example, so I don't offend anyone. I was brought up listening to certain types of music, like folk music, American folk music. Like some of you may know songs like Peter, Paul and Mary or Bob Dylan. I'm sure nobody knows about these things. But anyway, whatever it is, it's not important what it is. But somehow or other, because I was brought up in that way, whenever I hear a song that was composed by these people like 500 years ago, you know, it sort of stirs my heart. Isn't it? Because you're conditioned in a certain way. So that may be another reason why they keep the demigods, because it's just like, you know, it's just like how they used to decorate the house or something like that. So there may be many different reasons why they have the demigods on the altar. Another reason is that when their relatives come over, the relatives will criticize them. That's another reason. I mean, there's a variety of reasons why people keep the demigods on the altar. And as I say, there's no problem because you can actually take the Krishna prasadam that's offered to the Radha and Krishna deities and offer it to the demigods. So I don't discourage people. Krishna says, you should not discourage those who are materially attached, but encourage them to work in the spirit of devotion. So if someone's really attached to a demigod, I said, look, keep him on your altar, and keep her on your altar, and give them Krishna prasad. Lord Shiva loves Krishna prasad. Lord Shiva was dancing. In the Chaitanya Mangala, it describes that Lord Shiva was dancing in such ecstasy to get Krishna prasad, he almost destroyed the whole universe. So why not please Lord Shiva if you want? He's a devotee. I have Lord Shiva on my altar too, you know. I actually have Lord Shiva on my altar. Why? Not because he's God, but because he's a devotee. So I have Lord Shiva. I'm actually looking. I have Ganesh too right next to my altar. See? I'm a nice
Hindu. Some people worship Sai Baba Guru there.
So, but anyway, I have Ganesh, I'm looking right now at Ganesh. I'm looking at Lord Shiva. I'm looking at Hanuman. Why not? But none of them are God. They're servants of God. So there's no problem. There's no problem. I like Lord Shiva. I feel especially, let's say, connected to Lord Shiva. And I even like Yamaraj, but no, I don't have any pictures of him in my altar. I like him. He's a pure devotee, but I've very rarely seen devotees with a picture of Yamaraj on the altar. Okay. Thank you for your questions. I think it's time to end. Tomorrow, we're going to have the class an hour earlier because it's the Sunday feast time. It's 5 o'clock here, 7 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the evening here, 7 o'clock in the morning in Australia, and 9 o'clock in the morning in Fiji. Okay, that's tomorrow. All right, thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.